This event has allowed thousands to expand their personal libraries and has raised more than $2 million for literacy programs in the region. Joining me live in the studio to continue this conversation, it's Culture Shift's Amanda LeClaire. Hi, Amanda.
Hey, thanks, Rob. Happy Wednesday afternoon. Yes, after a two-year absence, Bookstock is returning to Livonia, its longtime home, the Laurel Park Place Mall. And the also longtime ambassador of Bookstock, Neil Rubin, is live in studio with us. Welcome to Culture Shift.
Delighted to be here, and I love my new title, Ambassador.
And yeah, Ambassador
of Best
of Reading.
It comes with a sash. There's a whole sash thing that we have for you. Yeah.
We are going to be talking about some of Neil's favorite books, the books that have changed his life, and we want to hear from you as well. Call us and tell us about one of the books that has absolutely changed your life, affected the way you saw the world, or just really touched you inside. That may have been decades ago, or maybe it was just this past year. 313-577-1019 is the number to join the conversation. 313-577-1019. Let's nerd out on books right now. So, Neil, congrats on Bookstock returning after 2 years away. This is a huge event. Thousands of people attend each year, hundreds of volunteers. It is a massive effort. So after 2 years away, were there any major hurdles to getting this up and running again?
Well, you have to remuster the volunteers, and you're right, it takes 500, 600 volunteers to put this thing on. We've had, you know, a couple hundred thousand books and other forms of media that we still had in storage, but people had been bringing us more. We had to coordinate that. All this stuff is actually stashed in three different places. We didn't have one place large enough to hold it. And then there's the whole logistical factor of getting it to the mall and getting it set up sort of all in one night, basically,
wow.
After the mall closes, so we're not in everybody's way, and so that it's ready for the presale on this coming Sunday morning.
Oh, this coming Sunday morning at Laurel Park Place Mall. We're talking about the return of Bookstock with Neil Rubin, and we want to hear from you. What is a book that has absolutely changed your life? Don't worry about giving us like a book report or anything. We just want to hear your passion for reading right now on Culture Shift. 313-577-1019. So, Neil, this will be, as you said, the presale is beginning this Sunday. It's a week-long event, and what happens like when you're there? All these years, have you gotten to speak to people who, you know, are just so passionate about reading, passionate about teaching other people to read and sharing that?
Absolutely. And that is just, it's the ultimate form of recycling. First, we get books out of people's basements and back in people's laps where they belong. And then, with the whole point here is to promote literacy and support programs, Oakland Literacy Council, Brilliant Detroit, all sorts of wonderful agencies out there who are doing the hard work of helping people read better or interesting them in reading at the same time. So we're selling books to support those things that teach people to read, so that, at least in theory, they can come to Bookstock next year and get fired up for being surrounded by more books.
It is amazing that you guys, over the course of Bookstock's creation, have given over $2 million away to literacy programs right here in Southeast Michigan.
And it's, you know, kind of a dollar at a time when you think of it. Most paperbacks are a dollar. Kids' books start at 50 cents, although they're mostly a dollar. Hardbounds are $3, or newer hardbounds are $4, CDs are $2, and somehow all of this has added up to $2.2 million.
Incredible. Bookstock is returning to Laurel Park Place Mall. The presale begins this Sunday, May 15th through the 22nd, right?
Exactly. The presale's 8:15 a.m. Sunday, $20 to get in. That's the only time there's any sort of admission charge. Otherwise, it's 11 to 6 on Sundays, 11 to 7 the other days. And you're talking about the passion. When the doors open for presale, do not stand between, you know, the onrushing book lovers and, in particular, the cookbooks.
Oh, sure. Wow. Yeah. You never stand between anyone and the book they want.
No way.
I worked at Borders for a long time, and we would do the presale for the Harry Potter books back in the day, the midnight sale. Wow. It was great. It was wonderful. It was so cool to see hundreds of kids just nerding out, passionate, carrying these, you know, large, thick volumes of Harry Potter around. And, you know, like they continued that love of reading throughout their lives. So we want to hear from you, 313-577-1019. All right, Neil, let us nerd out totally right now. Before we talk about your favorite books or a book that's changed your life, you as a storyteller, as a longtime columnist, longtime writer, it probably comes a little bit easier for you to talk about books that you love. But for folks who don't maybe normally, you know, have that narrative structure already kind of really deep in their mind, what is an easy way for people to, you know, just share something that they've read?
Well, just think about the part in it that moved you. That's, you know, even if you're not analyzing reading the way I might sort of intrinsically as I read, there are going to be parts of a book where you either think, well, either you skip it, which is a sign, or you think, wow. So stop sometimes, think what that wow is, what invoked that wow, and that's the part you express to somebody else.
Yeah. All right, we got some callers we're going to get to in a minute, but Neil, let's talk about a book that has changed your life. I want to start out when you were younger, and I'm going to bring Tia Graham in the conversation as well, because when you're little, that is when you're first introduced to books, and of course, almost every book that you're reading is like, whoa, it's a new world opening up. But there are certain ones that just stick with you throughout your life, and Neil, what would one of those be for you?
Well, it's funny. I can think of two, and you're right, one early, one later. In adolescence, but when I was in sixth or seventh grade, The Martian Chronicles by Ray Bradbury.
That's on my list to talk about, yes.
Oh, that's so wonderful. Yeah. See, and now we have bonded. We have bonded forever over a book we both read decades ago. And, you know, when you're a little kid, it's about the stories. You know, it's like, how many movies did you go to before you thought that wasn't very good? You were just so glad to be at a movie. Well, with books, you're moved by the stories when you're young. And The Martian Chronicles was the first one I can remember where I sat back and thought, wow, the writing here. And, you know, even at age 12, probably, I stopped and said, okay, in parts it's kind of spare, in parts it's vivid. Why is he doing this? How is he doing this? How am I so wrapped up in this? So not only is it just a great book to read and get carried along with, it was a great way for me for the first time to start analyzing the writing process.
Oh, very interesting. Yeah. I mean, he had a very interesting writing process from what I understand. He just wrote constantly. And what I loved about The Martian Chronicles and Ray Bradbury in particular, especially, you know, you don't have to be an adult reader. I read it again, like 11, 12, 13. It is so vivid. He writes in movies in your mind. Like he does it so well. I still think about all the stories in The Martian Chronicles today when we talk about, you know, going into space and colonizing Mars. And I think about that weird floaty feeling his writing gave me of like, what is this world he is painting? So we would love to talk to you through 313-577-1019. Tia, I know you have a great one.
You're talking so beautifully right now about literature and books right now. So I'm in awe. I'm just sitting back and just listening to you all in awe. So, but for me, it was Shel Silverstein's collection of poems that he did for kids. I believe it was Where the Sidewalk Ends. And there were just a bunch of goofy poems for kids to read. And it just talked a little bit about life. There was one about a little girl who was super messy. I related to that. So I just thought those stories and those poems told a story that kind of related to what I was going through as a little kid. I mean, Where the Sidewalk Ends, like I said, was a poem. It was also the title of the collection of poems. But then there was another one, Falling Up. And that was one of my favorite poems as well by Shel Silverstein. So those type of stories, short little tidbits, kind of got me into reading. And then, like you said, the hype behind Harry Potter, it completely just skyrocketed after that. I mean, I was absolutely blown away by Harry Potter.
Yeah, let's go to a call right now. Can we talk to Adrian in Detroit?
Sure can. Adrian, hi, welcome to Culture Shift.
Well, good afternoon, and I want to say I love to read. What started my love of reading was the Dr. Seuss, The Cat in the Hat, and I couldn't understand the rule is never allow anyone in your house when your parents are not home. Not only did they not, they didn't let a dog in, they let a cat in with a hat who brought his two weird friends, Thing One and Thing Two. And I was just blown away. And they took the mother's brand new dress. I'm like, oh my God, they're going to be in a lot of trouble. So I love Dr. Seuss. That's on my bookshelf now. Dr. Seuss, The Cat in the Hat.
Oh, absolute classic. Thank you so much for calling, Adrian, and sharing that.
Thank you.
313-577-1019, asking you to nerd out on books with us. Tell us about a book that absolutely changed your life, changed the way you looked at the world from any age. Maybe it was decades ago, maybe it was just last year. Rob, I know you are a voracious reader.
I've actually become one, and later. But early on, I was into some really weird stuff. Now that I'm hearing you talk about Martian Chronicles, Fahrenheit 451 is like the one that sort of spoke to me. And then somehow wound up with like Hunter Thompson. And I'm talking at like 11, 12, 13. Really didn't have any idea what I was reading. Understood, though, that this was how you could kind of take down the power structure with words. Mm. Like the pen was mightier than the sword, right? So Hunter Thompson stuff. And then recently Terry Pratchett, I have like gone on this Terry Pratchett kick. My wife did this years ago. My children did it. And now I'm doing it just now. And it's changing my life. Because it's the same thing. Again, it's like his ability to sort of whimsically take down power structures.
That's one of the great things about Bookstock. Reverting quickly to a plug, you'll find an author, because I have done this in several cases, find an author I hadn't read before or hadn't read much of, and suddenly there's a bunch of it there, and you come back again the next year and get more of it. It sort of feeds addictions.
Yeah, right.
And again, you know, books brought out the little revolutionary in you. When you think about it, and I hadn't until Tia was talking, you know, the guest was talking about The Cat in the Hat. That's really pretty subversive, and our moms read it to us.
It's chaos. It promotes chaos, to be honest. Yeah. We're talking with Neil Rubin, columnist for the Detroit Free Press, about the return of Bookstock happening at Laurel Park Place Mall beginning. The presale begins this Sunday. It'll be happening all next week. After a two-year absence, they are back, and we are totally nerding out on the love of reading, sharing our favorite books through the years. And we want to hear from you, 313-577-1019. You can give us a call. And let's go to
Dr. Cintron.
Yeah, Cintron.
We?
Yeah, in Detroit.
The good doctor, you are on the air. Hi, welcome.
Hello, thank you for having me. The book really changed my life, 1619, by Nicole Hannah Jones. And it's a must read for anyone living, working, associated with Detroit or any urban area. It really is captivating and mind-blowing when we think about the policies and the structures. And you mentioned breaking down the power structure of enslaved people here in the United States. And it's just really, it will change everyone in some capacity. And it's wonderfully written in that there's different authors for different sections giving different expertise from education to medical to real estate. It's just phenomenal insight into laws and policies that have kept enslaved people in their positions throughout these centuries.
Yeah. I don't know about you, but you know, in reading that, I suddenly understood also why there was such objection to it. You know what I'm saying? Like people were.
I see that. Yeah. The objection, yes, but I think there's growth in that, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
That's an excellent choice. Well, 1619 Project. Yeah.
Yeah, talking about subversion and in writing. I mean, if a book creates this much debate, this much criticism, this much, you know, even authorities trying to, you know, keep it away, you know, there's something in there that you gotta find out, you know, what's being
Absolutely.
Hidden, I guess.
And I think so. And it's a must read whether you're African-American, Asian, Polish, Puerto Rican, doesn't matter. It's really a wonderful book that helps you identify and empathize and truly understand the struggles that the enslaved people have, specifically African Americans. I really think it's not a negative book if you don't take it personally and you read it for growth and for connecting with humanity.
Doctor, thank you so much for the call. I appreciate it. Have a good day.
You're welcome.
All right.
God bless.
Bye-bye.
And I think that brings up a great point. Thank you, Dr. Cintron, for calling. The nonfiction books that have changed your life, history, maybe cooking, maybe anything else. Neil, can you think of one right now?
Oh, absolutely. And again, the whole notion of subversion in a positive sense, in just making you think of things the way you hadn't. Ball Four by Jim Bouton. He was a major league pitcher. Yeah. He had been a star with the Yankees in his youth. I was a little baseball geek, along with all the other things I was a geek about. And when he wrote this book, he was on the downside. You know, his arm had blown out. He was barely hanging on. And it was this funny, randy, direct, but still affectionate look at life in baseball and what it was really like, because to that point, everything was saccharine. The baseball, you know, any biography you read as a kid was, you know, just as told to pablum. It was, you know, baseball literature by and large at that point was really bad. And Ball Four shows up and it tells you that baseball players drank, they were worried, they cheated on their wives, they were jerks sometimes, they played for owners who were worse jerks than the players could ever possibly be. There was a sense of reality to it, and the baseball establishment was appalled. I, of course, was intrigued. I started out my newspaper career as a sports writer, and it was partly because that was a place in the newspaper where you could be creative with words, but it was also because of the look that Ball Four gave me behind the curtain. So hugely influential, not just for me, but for, you know, almost an entire generation, I think.
Talking about that shift between, is it the saccharine biographies, the, you know, cleaned up version of things, to what we kind of take for granted now is when, you know, biographies or anything come out, they're going to be gritty. They're going to be a little, you know, a little not nice, a little dirty maybe. When did that shift happen? Can you think of an author or a book that kind of like, had that sea change in our culture?
Ball Four was a big part of it. And the, you know, establishment sports writers were appalled. The sports industry was appalled. But at about the same time, or a little after, along comes Howard Cosell, the broadcaster, as a big influence in America. You know, tell it like it is. He would say things were wrong when they were wrong, or bad when they were bad. And it brought a whole new freedom, I think, to not just a freedom, but a demand. Like you said, now we want reality. Nobody's going to buy, nobody's going to accept some sort of a glossed over account.
Mm-hmm. Hyper-reality, maybe. 313-577-1019 is the number to call to talk to us about your favorite books, the books that have changed your life. Let's go to Kevin, who's in his car.
Hi, Kevin, in car. How are you?
Wants to talk about boxcars.
Oh, yeah.
Hello.
Hey.
Hi, Kevin.
Hey,
so a really cool thing that I just realized during this segment is I had forgotten about these books and how much they impacted my life, even to this day. So I don't know if any of you know the Boxcar Children series. They're kids' books, obviously. They're four kids that were orphaned. And so they go to live with their grandfather. And they kind of, like, travel around, like, helping people, solving mysteries, wherever they're at, what they're doing. And the thing that I think it taught me the most when I was a kid was that your family was wherever you were with people that you loved. And when I was growing up, I didn't know this until I was older, but my two oldest siblings are actually my half-siblings. And we now live in a world where I think most of us know someone that lives in a fractured or kind of nuclear household, whereas it might not be two parents. It might not be a mom and a dad. It might be two dads, or maybe the kids live with their grandpa or their grandma. Mm-hmm. And it normalized that for me. I didn't even know it until now, but I have friends that are foster parents, and the normalcy of it's what it should be as a baseline, but I don't think I had that baseline, or I wouldn't have it if not for those books. I think I'd have a kind of negative connotation to the idea of a non-nuclear family. And it really did have an impact on me, even to this point. And I'm 29, so, I mean, I still love reading, I still love books, but that was kind of what kicked it off for me was the series of the Boxcar Children.
Yeah, The Boxcar Children, huge series of books. They're still writing to this day, although the original author, Gertrude Chandler Warner, is long past. Thank you so much for the call, Kevin.
Thanks, guys.
And listen, we're talking with Neil Rubin, who's in the studio with us, and we should remind people that Bookstock is coming back to Laurel Park Place. It begins on Sunday, and it's going to run for a week. And that's why we're here, talking about books. There's really not much more than that. I mean, we're just here with the love of books. And these calls are actually reminding me of so many other things that that didn't, when you asked initially, I was like, oh, yeah, here's one. And now there's like 25 more that you know, greatly influenced my life.
Yeah, you begin to think about it, and you're like, oh, all through these years of my life, I can actually think about, you know, something I read at that point that just kind of altered the course of, you know, my thinking in that period of time, right?
Right. And, you know, we've been talking about gritty books and sort of game-changing books, but the fact is the standards that kids read, Hardy Boys, Nancy Drew, all of which have been updated as, you know, as the eras go on. I mean, one of the early Tom Swift books was, you know, Tom Swift and His Amazing Aeroplane. It takes a little more now to dazzle people. But those series are valuable because they connote the idea to kids, hey, reading is fun. It's not just something you have to do to get by in school. You can get lost in this. There's more of it. There's more of it to look forward to. Harry Potter, you know, which Tia was doing a wave over.
I mean, I'm still obsessed. At 30 years old, I'm still obsessed with Harry Potter. But I read all of the books as a kid. I had the whole collection. And it was just like, it was everything to us growing up at that time. So just transitioning to young adult books and then, of course, larger books after that was just, it was an easier transition because I had already fallen in love with reading.
Yeah, and what Amanda lived through at Borders, where people literally... line that your parents would help you dress up as Hermione and take you to Borders at midnight to get the new book. We did that in my house, you betcha.
Yeah.
And what a great thing. People that fired up for books. And you just hope that that continues, that people realize, hey, it might not be a series with seven wonderful volumes, but there's something there in a bookstore or at the book sale that's going to make me so glad it's in my lap.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You must have made a darling Hermione, by the way. So Jerry is with us from West Bloomfield and brings up an author. And I just realized when I saw the name come up, I was like, yes, I've read every single one of this man's books.
Oh, he's the best, isn't he?
Tell us who it is.
David Sedaris.
Of course. Familiar to all public radio listeners.
He's so good. And he's so generous when you go to his book signings. He waits until everybody gets through the line. 10 hours. He's amazing. And I've read every one of his books, and I just relate to him so much because we're about the same age and going through the 80s and 90s and all that craziness.
Jerry, what is it about the way he writes that you love?
Well, I'm amazed that he kept journals for all that time because obviously you can't remember everything. And I do try and write every once in a while to, you know, hopefully one day my son will read it for better or worse. But I forgot your question. I'm sorry.
Oh, the way he writes. Like, what is it about that you love the most?
Oh, he just cracks me up.
The snark. It's the snark.
Yes, yeah. And I'm snarky. So, yeah. I also love Augustine Burroughs. He's darker, but... And I've read... You know, I find a good author, and then I end up reading everything they've written.
Yeah.
Definitely. Wow. Thank you so
Thanks
much, Jerry.
Thanks for the call, Jerry.
Uh-huh. Bye.
So I know we need to wrap up in a couple of minutes. Again, we're talking to Neil Rubin about the return of Bookstock happening at its longtime home, the Laurel Park Place Mall in Livonia. This Sunday is the presale, lasts all through the week. You can head over to bookstock.com?
Bookstockmi.org.
Okay. So before we wrap up, I want to go around the roundtable here. What is a book in the last year or so, if you can think of, that has illuminated you?
Well, it's a reread, but it's something I turn back to every now and again. Love in the Driest Season by Neely Tucker, who was an old friend from the Free Press, who became a foreign correspondent, went to the Washington Post, is now, talk about a dream job, he's a staff writer at the Library of Congress. But when Neely was a foreign correspondent in Zimbabwe, he and his wife adopted an orphan. And it's all about that incredibly difficult process and the challenges and the joys and his life as a foreign correspondent, seeing the worst the world could throw at him. And then here's this incredible bright light in an orphanage found by the side of a road. I just can't get enough of that. And every few years, I need a resupply.
Oh, is the title of it again?
Love in the Driest Season by Neely Tucker.
Love in the Driest Season. All right, Rob.
It right now.
Rob?
At the beginning of the pandemic, I decided to read, this is just who I am. I decided to read The Plague by Camus.
Nice.
And my thought was, well, you know, I have a limited amount of time to dedicate to reading. And by the time I'm done with this, The Plague will be done. And that didn't work out well. Nor does the end of that. So what I decided to do was then shift to Terry Pratchett, which really changed my view. But that's something recent.
I mean, you don't read Camus to be optimistic about things,
no,
you know? Not really.
But that was the space I was in, April of 2020.
And I think that brings us to, T and I were talking about this right before we went on air today, a book that we are both, I finished it up and I handed it over to her to read that with probably maybe not the greatest choice in this time of life, but Octavia Butler.
Oh, yeah.
Parable of the Sower.
Yeah, yeah.
Finished it for the first time over Christmas. And I you know, reading a lot of, I've learned a lot of like apocalyptic sort of like literature. There's so much of it out, but from her perspective, for the way she talks about the end of the slow end of civilization,
yeah,
and the grittiness of it, the realness of it, that still has this, yeah, incredible desire to live.
I'm almost through it. I'm not quite there yet. But just like you were saying earlier, Neil, that moment in a book where it makes you go, whoa, let me take a step back and actually kind of digest what I'm reading, what I'm trying to understand what's happening in this world. Because if you're putting yourself in the world of what the author's painting for you, that book, I had to take a step back and I had to take a breath and I had to take a look at what we're doing right now in our own society today. And it definitely has parallels to what we're seeing going on with everything in the government. So it is definitely a book that I'm going to finish before the month is out. Mm-hmm. But it takes a little time to get into because it is a very, like you said, gritty topic.
Yeah,
it
needs a little breather once in a
while. It needs a little breather every once in a while. But it's a great read. It's a roller coaster ride.
All right. Well, thank you guys so much. Neil Rubin, Detroit Free Press columnist and the ambassador of reading for Bookstock, joining us again. Congrats on Bookstock coming back after 2 years.
Thank you.
Thanks, Neil.